My name's Eric Lyle. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, Greg. It's always nice to be welcomed anywhere. You know, there was a time when I wasn't welcomed anywhere, including my parents' home. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, and more importantly, the steps have allowed me to repair that harm. And until my folks passed, they welcomed me into their home for a lot of years. My sobriety date, September 18th, 1985. I've got a home group. I've got a sponsor. You know, I do a couple meetings a week. That's where I'm at. Sometimes three. Two for sure. My Friday night home group, the Marble group, and generally Saturday morning at the Promises meeting out in Fairview. I'd like to welcome our friend to reintroduce tonight, and guy that hadn't been here before, and especially our visitor from New Jersey. Welcome. I've traveled a little bit in sobriety, and it's always nice to walk into a meeting and somebody stick their hand out and welcome you, and you feel at home. Last week I talked about two and three, and if you weren't here, you know, everybody approaches this differently, and my wife did this, and I think she probably did one step each week. I'm not quite sure. We didn't talk about it, but I'm sure she did them, took a little bit longer as far as weeks than I did. But two and three for me, it was an event in that, you know, I was really sick sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous every night my first 10 months because I hadn't gone beyond step one, and I resisted a spiritual solution, and I resisted that because of my ego and false pride. And you know, I didn't want my folks to be right, because their path to, you know, spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, whatever your flavor may be, whatever you want to call that, I mean, it's, I talk about awakening in a book now, I didn't want them to be right, you know, so that was all ego driven, and it darn near killed me. But I ended up in an old timers hunting camp one weekend, and I was going to drink and kill myself. And he and another member of the fellowship talked to me about two and three and their experience with it, and what it was and what it wasn't. And we read some stuff in the book, and I made that decision that weekend. So that's how, why when, you know, Kevin asked me to do this, I kind of, well, I actually made a spreadsheet, because that's where my brain works. And you know, it's real convenient to move some stuff around. And anyhow, I'm like, yeah, you know, two and three will work well together. In the next four steps, I'm like, that was easy. Well, we'll do four the following week and five, six, seven the week after, because that's how I did them with my sponsor, really. And that's how I do them with the guys I sponsor. The other ironic thing is, you know, I'm working with a guy that's not new to Alcoholics Anonymous, but he's newly sober again, you know, sponsoring him, and you know, he's got 34 days today, which is really a miracle for this dude, because other than being in an institution, he hasn't stayed sober 33 consecutive days in years. And this past Sunday, we did his fifth step. So all the week prior, we were starting on it last week when I spoke, but you know, we were, you know, we sat down and read the four step and did the outline on a legal pad. And, you know, I talked to him. I says, well, I want you to start, you know, let's do resentments, and we're going to do fears, and then we're going to do your sexual and other harms. I said, but, you know, you're going to write resentment there, and you got four columns, because there's like three and a half in a book. I really think there should be. If Wilson had Excel, there would have been four columns there. He just ran out of room. You know, but I said, and you're going to start this thing. You're just going to write, you know, whom or what you resent right down the line. I said, there's a method to the madness here, and you're going to see it after you do all the way across to the right column. And this man is very willing right now. He's a very, very intelligent being. Way, way smarter than I'll ever be. Believe me, the 70s were not good on my brain. You know, but he didn't question it. He said, okay, I'll do that. I says, when you get to the bottom there, give me a call and tell me all those names and institutions in that first list, and then we'll go on to the middle one, you know, the second one over. So anyways, I haven't done a fist up with a guy in probably 6 months because they just haven't been sticking lately, and you know, that's just the way it is when you sponsor, but I stayed sober the whole time, you know, so there's some correlation there, I believe. At least that's my belief. But anyways, it's for me, you know, I'm much more humbled by facilitating and sponsoring somebody through a fourth and fifth step than I was doing my own. You know, there was some fear surrounding doing mine. And my sponsor, we talked about this for, you know, we read the book and he showed me how he did this. And he even gave me some examples from his fourth step. You know, and he said, you know what? The most important thing really is the first column, because we're going to need the names and institutions that you harmed. And the column on the right, what was the root cause of this? He says, and I don't know, maybe you're different than me, but this is what I saw in that right column. Fear and selfishness. That was my inventory. I don't know how yours is going to play out, but we'll see shortly, you know. You know, those four things they ask us to look for in our 10th step are also, you know, really in our 4th step. That's one of the, we got to identify the root cause, man. What's the problem? You know, so we can ask God to remove it and so we can continue to watch for these things. So, you know, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. You know, I'm a fear-driven human being. And I can be sober, too. You know, when I started mine, he says, let's start on resentments. I only had about 6 resentments on mine. There's a couple things I want to read. There's a kind of a preface to this that I think jump out at us. Mainly because I was talking with Jack about this on the way in. You know, the book talks a lot about action. You know, once I did 1, 2, and 3, I had to do some work, and I have to continue to do some work today to stay sober. It's not hard work, but I need to do it. I need to do it consistently, as this alcoholic does. But after the third step prayer, pardon me, it says, next we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Now, I certainly didn't ever think about who I was angry at, you know, and who I resented, who I feared. Was I being dishonest? And was I being selfish? I never thought about those things. I thought about myself. I frankly didn't care if anybody got in my way, including my parents or my employer or my wife, for that matter. I was a selfish, fearful human being, but I didn't see that then. When I got done with this inventory, and my sponsor did this fist up with me and showed me this stuff. Though our decision was vital and a crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us, blocking me from God, from Spirit. Our liquor was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes and conditions. So we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. And it talks about a business inventory, and I understand that. I've had to do that for years. I had to do that actually when I was drinking the last couple of years. If I was at work when they did inventory that day. Often I wasn't, you know. It talks about, you know, businesses do this. We have to do this with our lives. We had to take stock of what we had and what we didn't have, you know. It says resentment is another number one offender. In dealing with our resentments, we set it on paper. So they gave us this diagram, this formula to use, and it works. You know, in my sponsor, I remember when we were talking about this, he says, if you have more than 1 or 2 sentences on that second column from the left, you're writing too much. This probably should be much less than that, you know. And that was really good advice. You know, I was not writing a biography, and I was not going to confession. I mean, I certainly understand people of certain faiths, that's part of their spiritual path. you know, and we need to embrace that here. We don't want people to feel excluded. But this isn't a confession, it's an inventory. We need to find out what we got and what we don't have, you know? You know, it says, we listed people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry. I was angry at my wife, my employer, my birth mother, and I'll get to that in a second, my parents, and one young lady from my childhood. That's all the resentments I could come up with. And all through the subsequent years of my sobriety, only once did I ever identify a resentment. And that was towards one of these people on this list. And I'll touch base with that in 10 when we get to that. So I had these people that I resented. I was angry at them. You know, my wife was a drunken junkie just like me. But she would not do what I wanted her to do when I wanted her to do it, you know. And rightfully so on a lot of occasions, because I was a drunken junkie too, you know. I was not a very good husband whatsoever. I was not a very good son, you know. My parents, I resented them because I thought they were controlling, especially my mother. And what it really was, though, is that I was angry, once again, that they were right about the path to live. They lived their lives right. They knew what right living was, and they were selfless, especially my father. But I resented that. I you know, they didn't, in my eyes, they didn't ever have any fun, and they were just really stuffy people, and I didn't like them. And there were some things, you know, that I resented about my mom, which subsequently came out years and years later. When I was young, maybe 5 or 6 years old, when I was old enough to understand it, my parents told me I was adopted at birth. They adopted me at birth. My folks couldn't have children. They were my mom was in her late 30s, my dad was in his early 40s, and they adopted me as an infant. And when they told me this, and I didn't realize this then, I certainly identified this when I did my inventory, that I resented my birth mother. Because I felt like she had abandoned me. But then I got sober, and that whole perception changed quite dramatically, actually. But at the time, I really felt abandoned and unwanted, when the evidence indicated that your parents were very loving and all my needs were met, including nurturing and being loved. But I didn't see it that way, because I'm an alcoholic waiting to happen up till 11, 12 years old when I took my first drink. I mean, I had alcoholic thinking. I just didn't have the physical allergy yet. So I had these resentments, and I put them down. In that right column, everything, the only two words I had were fear and selfishness. Fear and selfishness. There was this theme, but I did it the way I do it with my guys. I went down the first column, the second column, the third column. What did it affect? Primarily those things, and you know, obviously my self-esteem, my security instincts. You know, I had some fears based around my wife. Like, you know, if she would leave or I would walk out on her, I feared doing that. Because of my financial security. I mean, it was easier to drink on two people's income than one. You know, and I'm serious when I stand here and tell you that. I thought about that a lot. But this pattern developed. I was fearful and I was selfish. Certainly I was dishonest. I didn't have that many resentments. Resentment wasn't over here much. When I went on to my fears, though, I had all kinds of fears. There probably was 25, 30 fears. I feared everything, man. But I didn't let on that I feared it, you know. And I was selfish. A lot of my fears were selfishly based. You know, and most of that had to do with my security and my esteem. So I went through that part of the exercise, and I'm talking with him after I do each column, and you know, my guys now with, you know, communications the way they are, that's real easy to do. I was doing this when you still had to call long distance. Where I lived was my sponsor's long distance phone call, You know, and I was broke, man. So we didn't talk long about this stuff. You know, I called him, went down the list, and he's like, okay, let's go on to the next one. And I did that. And when we sit down once a week, we'd, whatever step we were at, we'd review that. But, so I went through the fears. And some of the resentment, but a lot of the fears, I realized, back on 62 or 63, it's one of my most favorite pages in the book. I refer back to this a lot with my new guys, but I did when I was doing my inventory, where it talks about selfishness and self-centeredness, and the crux of it, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-sinking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us to be in a position to be hurt. That happened to me a lot. When I'm doing my inventory, not only did I write down the stuff I feared, I resented, but I looked at some of those situations because some of these were going to be harms to others, and I knew that. I had harmed some people that I didn't resent, I didn't fear them. I just treated them bad. I had hurt them, and I needed to amend that. But every time when I got into a jackpot, it's because I said or did something that precipitated that person reacting. Every time. That happened a lot with my wife and I. Often it happened. So I listed these fears. But again, selfishness, dishonesty, were in that right column. It was my pride, my personal, including sex relations, and my security instincts. It was about the money, man. I did a lot of things in order to be able to continue to get loaded when I was out there. Not all of them were like working 40 hours a week, okay? And there was, when we got to 8 and 9, there was some financial amends to make. But I had to set those people or institutions down on paper. I knew that. And, when I did that third step, and I talk about this, it wasn't like there was this burning bush, Bill Wilson experience, laying in detox, but there was a relief. But I also knew, because I had read through this text, the 164, a couple times, I knew there was going to be some work to do, and there was going to be some of this stuff that was going to be difficult, especially those amends things, and I kept dwelling on, the financial part of it, not so much the emotional and spiritual men to some people, including my parents, who I owed a whole lot of different amends to, but I knew there was going to be a lot of work, and I wasn't fearful of it. I just knew it was a process, but if I was going to stay sober, I needed to do it. And to this day, I don't know why that willingness to do this. Well, it was God. I know that today. It was a spiritual awakening. And again, at this point, I'm still using the consciousness of the group as my higher power. I haven't developed my spiritual connectedness to God and my understanding at the level it is today. But I knew there was going to be a lot of work to do, and I knew it was going to be difficult at times, but I knew I was going to be okay. And I just knew it. I had this knowing that, okay, if I do this, not only am I going to be able to clear this wreckage of the past, but I'm going to feel better about myself, and I'm going to change in the process. So, I went through my fears, and there's a couple points that I'd like to touch on, and this is the start into, it talks about maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. We got to get, if I'm angry about something today, I got to do something about it. Anger is not a good place for me to go. It happened once recently, actually in the last couple months. I got very angry about something. Harmed somebody in the process, had to make an amend. I'm still not fully sure why I was so angry. Jury's still out on that one. So a couple things I'm just I wasn't quite able to put my finger on. But it says if we were to live, we had to be free of anger. And then it starts talking about people that, you know, they're planting some seeds here for later contemplation, I think. You know, 10th, 11th step stuff. You know, and this is while they're doing your inventory. You know, we ask God to help us show these people we're angry with the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. This goes back to the guy I talked about the first week, I believe, that I worked with when I got sober, and I resented this guy, and my wife asked me to pray. She said, well, you should pray for this dude. And after 30 days, she says, is that working? I said, no, he's still alive. You know, I was pretty dark, but when, you know, it's not that much longer, I get to this, I'm like, okay, that's what she was talking about. I mean, I started praying for his peace and grace. I don't know if I even meant it. Actually, the weird irony of that whole thing, and I never mentioned that to you, a couple weeks ago, is I ended up having to supervise this guy for a year or two. And he retired. And I made my amends to them, but to him by this time, because I treated this guy terribly. And his last day, we had a little, you know, cake and stuff for him, and a little party at lunch. And he came up to me, he says, you know what, it was good working for you. Thank you for when you talked to me about your harms you had done to me. And this guy was a flaming drunk, he still was. But he recognized that, and I thought, okay, that road's, I'm okay with this guy. You know, I thought it was kind of funny. I ended up having to manage him. you know, but we look at this person as being a sick person and pray for them, you know. And again, it starts asking us, you know, to look where we've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. You know, it talks about fear in that right column. It was constant for me. I was driven by fear. And today, you know, I really, this whole inventory thing, I mean, in the 10th step, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but it really boils down to, am I being present in love or in fear? For me, that's the only two places I can be. And when I say love, that doesn't mean sex. I mean, it means being loving to my fellows. You know, and that could be as simple as holding the door open for somebody, for me. You know, trying to be loving instead of fearful. Well, you know, why does she have 13 items in the 10-item line, you know? I mean, that's just me being selfish. I don't know what's going on with that person's life, so I need to, you know, afford them some grace and some love, and, you know, maybe they're taking care of a dying parent. I don't know. What's the big deal? I got no place to go, really. You know? I'm heading home from work. So can I be loving or can I be fearful? Which is based in self for me. So that's where I'm at today. But I needed to look at all this stuff because this pattern developed. I was selfish and I was fearful. Selfish and I was fearful. You know, and the whole the sex conduct component of this, you know, I talked to my sponsor about it. There are only a few names on there. You know, I mean, it was the 70s. I drank and got loaded from the mid-70s to the mid-80s. It was a free-for-all. You know, it really was. And there's probably more people that I harmed sexually than I remember because I was a blackout drinker. And you load me up with a bunch of cocaine and a half gallon of vodka and I black out, but I go for about 3 days. So, you know, there's people that I'm sure I've harmed sexually that were not on my list. I couldn't remember who they were. But the ones that were there really stuck out to me. You know, my wife, you know, some young ladies from high school, a couple, you know, there weren't that many. But the point of it was, you know, what was I? I was dishonest. You know, in every situation in my sex inventory, I said and did things that were not what I truly meant. Okay? Yeah, I loved you. No, I didn't love you. I wanted to have sex with you. That was the bottom line. I was a selfish human being. And I did not care that that would harm them in the long run when 3 weeks later I was bailing and, you know, I was drunk and looking for a different girl. You know, I didn't care. I just, you know, it's selfish and self-centered. You know, and it also talks in here about, you know, none of us are arbiters of this. This is between us and our higher power. You know, and that's not to let us off the hook, but, you know, it's there to allow us to formulate our own ideal along with our God. You know, I've never stood in judgment of any of the dudes I sponsored. Now, there's situations where I say, you know what, I don't think that's a very good idea. You're 4 months sober and you're trying to hook up with the young lady that's got 5 months, and neither one of you are doing anything but suffering from untreated alcoholism. I don't think that's a good idea, because it's going to turn out bad, and I've seen it happen every time, you know, and sometimes people die. And that's happened. It happened to one of my sponsees a couple years ago, you know. You know, I'm not there to work these guys through that, other than to say, you know what, we need to do the steps. We got to get sober, and then maybe see what you got to bring to a relationship, not what you're going to take from it. Because I was a taker. You know, I was a taker, and I've learned to try to be giving. You know, but they also talk about, you know, if we stumble, are we going to get loaded? Well, maybe not. You know, maybe we won't drink. You know, are you sincere about wanting to move forward? You know, but if you're not quite sure of that yet, you need to find yourself a newcomer to work with. I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. It says, if sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. Now, I remember being at a young people's conference in 95, the Pennsylvania State Young People's Conference. We hosted it here. We had an old timers panel, and Bev D was one of the people on there. And she said this very thing. And she quoted it because that's what her sponsor told her. And I thought, yeah, you know what? Sponsor's been telling people that for a long time. Sometimes we listen, sometimes we don't. You know? But I got through this process with my sponsor, you know, writing it. And next week I'm going to talk about my fifth step with him. But you know what? The most important thing I found out was that I was selfish and fearful. And it drove every thought that I had back in step one. That was in every thought I had was based in those two things. You know? And when I was doing inventory with my new guy Sunday, you know, he looked at me at one point and I says, I understand now why you had me do the way it, why you had me do it the way you did it, because I would have been over here when I should have been here looking at the cause. What did I do? Because I need to know what I'm going to amend, you know, later on down the road, and who I'm going to amend it with, and what is the amend over here. He said that we got done, and it was quite a few hours. That he's like, dude, it's so simple, but there's a lot of it here. But it's the same thing over and over again. He says, well, that's the liability, for lack of a better word. But the asset is going to be the reverse of that when you go to make your amends. You know, you're going to be loving instead of fearful. And you're going to have a degree of humility. I mean, that's what that process requires in my mind. I mean, even that process of doing that with another human being, to me, is very humbling. But we found out, and this guy's, you know, he understands business. And I'm like, to me, this is a math exercise. This is a business exercise. We're just looking at what we got, because we need to know what we're going to ask God to remove later on. You know, it's as simple as that. And this isn't designed to make me feel bad. just need to know what stock I have in the house, man. And I didn't feel bad after doing it, you know. It was good to see it on paper. And you know, he was a good guy. And he told me some things about an analogy in the beginning. I'm not going to repeat it because some of it I wasn't quite getting. And he told me this analogy. I says, yeah, now I get it, man. You know, I understand exactly. It's not whom or what. It's like the why. You know, why were you this way? Because I was fearful and selfish. I was a taker, man. You know, hourly I didn't look fearful. I mean, I got my ass kicked a couple times, more than a couple times. I could put on a real bravado thing. I wasn't a very good fighter. I had a big mouth. And I got beat up quite a bit. But it was all a charade. I was just terrified inside. And, you know, it set me up. He set me up to go through 8 and 9 and come out of 9 in a pretty peaceful place. And I think it's vital that, you know, we carry that message of, you know, it's not about what we did. And believe me, I've heard some pretty ugly stuff. You know, and I did some of that ugly stuff. But I've heard some pretty ugly stuff in these inventories, and that's not really what we need to get at. We need to get at this stuff over here in the right. You know, because if I've got half a chance, I got to know what's wrong, turn it over, and then continue to watch for that stuff. So that's about all I have on that.
Thanks, Eric. So that brings us to our question portion of the evening. Who has a question for Eric on step 4? All right.
Hey Eric, I'm Eric, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey. With a C or with a K?
With a C.
See? That my theory is confirmed.
Yeah?
Don't ever name your kid Eric with a C. I got a couple friends who are Eric with K, they're not drunks.
Hey, you talked about selfishness and ego and all that stuff as being pretty much your detriment over all the years. I'm pretty much the same guy with listening to what you say. What practices or things did you do to try to break that? Because I think that's kind of ingrained in you from a very young age. It's hard to break that.
Well, I for me, it's the process of not so much 5, but 6, 7, 8, 9 certainly were the start of that, because I couldn't go to make an amends to somebody without humbling myself and acknowledging the problem and the harm and wanting to live and be the opposite of those things. I mean, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but it's the process of awakening, you know, spiritually. You know, when I go and ask, you know, became entirely ready to have this stuff removed, I, you know, that had to come from the heart, and that had to come from a space of love and commitment to continue on with the steps. I mean, you know, and we'll get into that next week, but when I identified the problem, I mean, I got to make a decision. Am I going to continue to live in fear and self and ego? Or am I going to do something different? And part of that is that, for me, that graduation, that gradual awakening of spirit, of becoming connected to a higher power. That's the process of the steps for me. You know, it says when we get to 12, having had a spiritual awakening. For me, what you're talking about, that stuff was gradually replaced with humility and love and selflessness. I can't say I consciously woke up every morning, and after them first couple of years in my meditation, asked to be divorced from that. But it became more of how can I be useful to others, because I knew to be useful to others, I had to be humble and loving and unselfish. I mean, it's a gradual thing. I did not have this profound spiritual experience like some people do. It was educational. You know, it's like, okay, dishonesty. Well, that's, for me, it's based in fear. I learned this in my inventory. I clearly recall going into a convenience store a couple years sober after I had done this inventory, and we're going backpacking, Penny and I, and I handed the young lady a $20 bill. I got a carton of Marlboros and soda or something. And back then, I should have got like $9 and change back, you know, whatever it was. $8, and she hands me the reverse. She hands me like $14. Whatever it was, I looked at it for a minute and thought, that's not right, and she's going to have to pay the till at the end of the shift. It's the first time I consciously remember sober thinking about somebody else's well-being instead of my being based, because believe me, if I bought a beer at the bar and you gave me more money than I had coming back, I did not tell the bartender that he gave me too much change. I took it and ran. And I looked at her and says, nah, it should be less than that. And we figured it out. She looked at me and said, thank you. And I walked out and said, where the hell did that come from? Well, that came from you people, the book, God as I Understand God. That wasn't something I set out that day in my morning and say, well, God, you know, show me. It just happened. But it happened because I was trying to follow the principles in here. I knew that wasn't right if I took that. But when I'm drinking, I'm full of fear and self. I'm going to run out of money, so I'm going to have to do something probably illegal to get more money. You know, that's the way my head works. So that would have been, you know, I don't know, 20 quarter drafts at the corner tavern, you know? I mean, that's the way I computed that when I was drinking. I was out of there, but I thought of her. Because I knew, you know, in the late 80s, she was probably making like $350 an hour or something. And she would have been given 3 hours of her pay back to the owner of the joint, you know? So I don't, you know, it came from God. It came from the awakening, the consciousness that I felt in here. It came from exactly in those kind of situations. Now having some information about how I'm wired and how I think, thinking, that's not right living, man. So I thought of her instead of myself. You know, so I don't know if that answers your question. It's a, for me, it's a process. It's not like I can say, oh, you know, halfway through step 9, all this shifted. It just was a process like that. And that's actually right around the time I was starting to make amends, too. Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else?
Sorry.
I didn't talk long enough.
I started walking. Thanks again, Eric. It's always great listening to you. Two quick questions. When you're working with somebody, do you have them burn their 4-step? And the other thing is, do you set a time limit on them after they do their 3rd step and it talks about action? Do you say, do you put a time limit on them? Or
No, we don't burn their 4-step because that's the list.
Okay.
They need that information.
Okay.
So, I you know, I'm emphatic about that too. I think it's like,
well, you just hear it.
Yeah. No, we need those names, and what's the harm here? You know.
Right.
The second thing is, yeah, I guess there's a time limit because when we finish step 3, and usually I end up taking it with them, but I don't always make that a requirement. I allow them to make that decision. No, the decision to do the 3rd step. So when we get done, we read. what I read at the beginning of the meeting. We walked into this course of vigorous action. So I say, you're going to go home and you're going to read through the 4-step instructions and then get a hold of me. Usually within a week of them completing, and oftentimes shorter than that, whenever we're able to get together. And we go through, they've read that next few pages, and you sit down with the legal pad, and I do an example, an inventory, a couple things that I, of my inventory, and I said, this is how you're going to do it. And then I explained to them, they're going to start in that right column. When you're done, you call me. I mean, this last guy, I think it was 4 days, and he had it done. And I think, you know, I've done inventories with guys where we went to a cottage or a hunting camp on a Friday night, and we sat on the deck, and I was reading a book, and I had this book with me, and they started writing. You know, 1 a.m, they were done, and if they had a question, I answered it. When they got done with the column, they read them off to me, and they wrote more, and the next morning, we got up and did their fist up. I won't tolerate not doing this in a timely manner, because it's not going to work. We're just prolonging. You know, you want to stay sick, or you want to get well. You want to live with untreated disease, or you want to treat this thing and move on to a better life. I mean, it's their choice. But if they're balking after a week or two, we have to have a heart-to-heart. If they continue to balk, I usually let them go. It's that simple. Because they're not willing, man. You know, waiting 2 or 3 weeks to start an inventory is not rigorous action from my point of view. I mean, I have customers call me and they need something built that day and shipped the next day. You can best believe we get on it, man. You know, it's like, okay, it's time to do this thing. I mean, and I think we need to remember the historic context of what even preceded this stuff, but even after the book come out, how desperate people were. They did this in a really quick manner. In fact, especially my younger guys, I encourage them to read the historical text, pass it on, hey, it comes of age, and Dr. Bob and the good old timers, just to kind of get a view of what it was like. I said, you know, I'm very, very grateful I got sober when I did, because there were meetings, there were people that had accumulated some sobriety that understood the steps. I mean, it wasn't like I got mailed a copy of the book and I'm shaking and I'm trying not to drink, and I read through this and start doing what it says, and when it gets to 12, I got to go talk to my doctor or my minister and see if they know some other drunk if I don't know one in order to stay sober. I got it made today. I just walk into my home group and stick out my hand. You know, there's newcomers showing up every day. Sponsoring somebody, finding somebody to sponsor is not a problem. I'm very grateful for that. You know, and I told my friend Sunday, I said, you know, this is pretty emotionally draining for me too. It's humbling to take somebody's fist up. I says, and he kind of knows, I've had some weird hell stuff going on for about 4 or 5 months, and it's all going to be good, but it's a process, and I've had some tough days, and you know, and I says, dude, you know how much you've helped me the last 33 days? He says, no, I don't. I says, believe me, you have. You know, more so than he had sent me a really very humbling text after we were done. And I says, dude, you don't know the half of it, man. You know, my situation is not a big deal. It's more just something that's going to take a while to figure out, and everything's going to be fine, you know. It's not like I'm terminally ill or anything. But he helped me through that. Every time I had a tough time in life, when life got weird, I'd end up with a new guy. Every time. You know, somebody calls on the AA answering service. The Scotch drinker. That's the guy. I talked about him a couple weeks ago. You know, this guy calls, and you know, and there was stuff going on in my life, mine and my wife's, with her health and stuff. And this guy calls and thinks, man, I'm thinking this dude's got some crap going on. You know what? What I'm dealing with is nothing compared to this guy. You know, and he just helped me more than, you know, we talked about it right before he passed away, how much he, because he, you know, he thanked me. And I'm like, dude, I was just doing what I was supposed to do. Book tells me to do this. I want to do it, but man, you helped me through some tough times, you know. So that's the long answer to your short questions.
Thanks, sir.